This is an example of speech.
All our history of royal and welcome to Tell Me What to Think, free from oversight and free of charge. Thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blowhard evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. To listen to the archives, go to stoneduckmedia.com or tellmewhattothink.com. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Albro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis, and I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at @green_weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we tell you what to think and what to be afraid of. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think.
Washing guns and drugs, financing the lives of the class of thugs.
Oh, terrorism is probably the least of the fucking things that we need to be worried about.
What was that?
Terrorism.
Oh.
Yeah. It's been 20 fucking years almost. Osama bin Laden is fucking dead. His fucking atoms have been rearranged among sharks.
Yeah, but can't you be afraid of... Yeah, devil's advocate here. Can't you be afraid of, the imitators and the, people paying terroristic homage to Osama bin Laden?
Sure. And, if you were genuinely afraid, you wouldn't let the fucking TSA get fucking or work without getting paid, so I don't know what...
Yeah.
It's all kind of...
Yeah, let's just grow our own dissatisfied, impoverished terrorists, right?
Well, that's not even security sector. Well, that's not even to mention that Stevenson guy in North Carolina, what was it, last year or the year before, who actually bombed an airport? Or tried to bomb an airport?
Oh, yeah.
So, if anything, be afraid of the fucking fascists on the far right, because they have proven that they are crazy, they have fucking body counts, and they're going to just increase.
Okay, so... particularly since Trump's been elected, though this was, there have been reports coming out since before him about the growing threat of, white supremacist, far-right type terror, right?
Sure. Well, that was reported since the Obama administration.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But it's been more upfront in people's, news feeds type thing in the past couple of years. Charlottesville and all that. And what you just referenced, the guy trying to blow up an airport. So you're saying maybe that's something to be afraid of. But not that I don't want legitimate law enforcement to do the normal legitimate things you should do for people who are planning on blowing up a bunch of innocents and all that. But should I be afraid of a war on terror within our border? Well... on a different skin color of people within our borders?
Absolutely not.
I don't mean coming at me, but, would that just be fair? But, I'm talking, the process changes and the policy. What if they just created a new Patriot Act to go after those people? You know what I mean?
That's, rational, because that shit might actually happen with Trump in the office.
But don't I still have the same...
You still have the same 13th Amendment, the 5th Amendment. There's still constitutional rights. So as much as they might try to overreach with process and procedure, they're still really, really boxed in by what the federal judiciary will allow them to do, despite how crazy the judges may seem.
Okay. All right. So if
there
I
is
see
an
a ramp
up, role to the law.
So if I see a ramp up in a crackdown on this type of stuff, within our, obviously that's not going to happen soon, given president and all that. But
not like ICE or anything is going to come knocking on people's doors. That's one thing that some people in our country need to be afraid of, and unfortunately they're not citizens to enjoy some of our same protections.
I mean, there have been those few reports about people who might be citizens, though.
Yeah, and that's even worse. That should scare everybody. That okay. Hey, if a citizen, an ICE agent looks at you funny and thinks that, or just wants to believe that you're not a citizen, he can just basically fuck you over and screw your life up right good.
So we should be afraid of
government overreach, government overreach, but individual bureaucrat overreach. Because it's power, and with the right, incentives line up, or people are, for whatever reason, irrational when they try to make a decision, they can really fuck up people's lives.
Yeah. So that's something we're putting a little bit more, part of it in the to be afraid of, part of it in the not to be afraid of, and that would be, the war on terror is, that fear-mongering is something we should move past.
We should have moved past it in, 2002, but okay. It's 2018, or 19, we might as well start now.
As soon as the color code system came out, I think I was skeptical.
Yeah. I was in the military, and I was skeptical on the fucking 12th.
Yeah,
well, and they were because the news reports immediately were like, fucking, oh god, terrorists everywhere. We're like, people in their small town grocery stores were like, are the terrorists about to bomb our grocery stores? Mm-hmm. Like, man,
yep.
Please.
Yep.
The World Trade Center was just a giant pile of fucking anti-imperialist targets that had nothing to do with any part of the American way of life. And the fact that George Bush and Dick Cheney conflated the two is just disgusting on several levels.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, they did more of a... Yeah, so they could have made Americans feel calmer in two ways. And they chose the way that was like, okay, feel a little bit calmer because, we're torturing people, but don't feel too calm.
Right. They're still out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and they could have gone a little bit more on... Yeah.
This is a criminal matter. The FBI are handling this. The military's not going anywhere. We're not about to attack the Taliban.
You know, it's interesting, and this is, I think you could make connections to the war on terror, but a lot of people in America are afraid since then, and it's somewhat justified, of terrorist actions happening in places like that. It just didn't happen in the Al-Qaeda drops a bomb in your Piggly Wiggly. It's the churches, schools, country music concerts, gay clubs being shot up. And that's by multiple stripes of people.
Yeah, by so many random... I mean, unfortunately, in American life, because we are so heavily armed and not... we'll say we just don't necessarily take the best care of our mental health.
Yeah.
In a general systemic way. There are, real problems out there that are, I hate to say it, crazies, but, people who have real issues who are going to do things that everyone is going to regret.
Is it completely crazy for me to say that 9/11 happening is such a huge, giant thing? And I'm not even... I'm not trying to blame, I'm really blaming, just it happening, however it happened.
Right.
And honestly, just a few years before that, Oklahoma City, by the way.
1995? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was Michael Christopher Estes, is the guy I mentioned earlier.
Oh. And so, it's, because we see these, smaller level but still mass acts of violence. The shootings up in the Las Vegas's and the San Bernardino's and all that. Sandy Hook's, it's just on and on. I mean,
San Bernardino was a weird one because it was two people, but that's
very good. But, I mean, does it seem like, I don't know, it just feels like a world in which 9/11 happened makes it easier for these other things to happen through no concrete policy way, but through a sort of what we've collectively lived through.
So independent of their actions, or how they came to be, do you think ISIS would have been as extreme or needed to have been as extreme if not for Al-Qaeda and 9/11?
I think that's a totally similar, because one thing you'd hear about when you kind of get these reports filtered in from about ISIS, you know, in the hate, you know, in the peak of that, was like, even the Al-Qaeda people hate them.
Like, man.
Like, they're the they're crazy to Al-Qaeda. You know, like, you'd get those types of stories, and...
I'm a Wahhabi terrorist, but my word.
Yeah. That's morbid. That's, yeah. But, but yeah, I mean, it's that's sort of an escalation thing. To me, like, the shootings, though, is a little bit more like a high tide raises all boats type thing. Mm-hmm. Like, 9/11 just raised the bar for, like, acceptable slaughter.
Well, yeah, and AR-15s weren't nearly so prevalent as they were until after then, you know? I mean, they were there, but could you go into, like, any number of... Yeah. Gun stores and just pick up an AR-15. Not the way that you can now.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those you often hear. You know, so speaking of being afraid, there's the fear that I mean, I don't share so much, but of like people taking your gun. Well, also, I don't have guns, so I wouldn't be afraid of someone taking my guns. But people, you know, being afraid of the government taking your guns, and so like the that fear spiked. Gun sales after Obama became president, right? Like, you've heard that mm-hmm. one before.
And Trump.
It dropped when Trump became president.
Oh, really? Oh.
Well, it dropped, but I think the whole like making the NRA crowd making a big deal of that possibility after these mass shootings, which is one of their more despicable, greedy stances they've taken, but mm-hmm. that to me is seen as a way of bumping up those gun sales so they don't drop as like so much, or maybe even, you know, you can keep your numbers up. Like, they're creating little mini Obamas to make that crowd afraid.
Sure, they gotta goose their numbers.
Yeah. But anyway, I wonder, I've never heard what happened after 9/11. Like, you can easily picture it where there's like the sort of like Red Dawn crowd that really went all in on.
It's not like there's an enemy that, like, not even, so if I, like, something is xenophobic as, like, Mexicans, you couldn't, like, take a gun to an airport and reasonably end up in Saudi Arabia to shoot Iraqis, I guess, or Saudi Arabians, I'm not sure.
Well, you join the military to do that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's unfortunately what a lot of people did after 9/11.
But I can still, but, okay, but I mean, like, there's been a small portion, I think, and I hope, but a consistent voice of the people who are afraid of, you know, taking over our little like Rust Belt town and instituting Sharia law there. And like, there are people who think that, and I feel as if that would overlap with
like, that doesn't seem rational to me. Like, those, it just seems like pure crazy people, right?
But we're talking about we're trying to apply rationality, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, we're talking about what makes people afraid, what's a legitimate fear, and, I mean, I would put that under the illegitimate fear, but, I mean, that's, like, that's directly tied to, like, people making money, and, I don't know, there's just, I've never really heard it explored, like, the private side of the war on terror. Like,
there's a lot of money being made.
More bomb shelters, you know, like, their biggest peak since the end of the Cold War, or something like that.
Bomb shelters have really fallen out of favor.
Well, I mean,
forgotten about that nuclear violence.
Well, you were saying before we started recording how that's just the fact that Russia has a bunch of nuclear weapons is pretty much the main thing to be afraid of Russia over.
Yeah, I mean, they're a giant country that have, shall we say, their own problems in their own country and they're near abroad that will keep them occupied if, you know, the United States can, disentangle themselves. Or we can disentangle ourselves in these hostilities that we've created.
So here's one, I can't say I, like, feel this deeply or often, but one fear I have about Russia is, And I want to get to, like, the election stuff in a second, but, like, you bring up these foreign entanglements. But take something like Syria. Like, one fear I have is that Russia, their military there does something irresponsible, which leads to broader conflict, I guess, with the U.S., I mean, or even someone else, I suppose, but...
Honestly, I'm really not afraid of that. the Russians and especially the Pentagon were open as, or as open as they could be immediately and established those hotlines and communication channels to, you know, maintain professionalism and keep planes out of the same airspace kind of stuff. Like, the Russians' forces are actually kind of the some of the more professional in the theater compared to, like, Hezbollah and the Iranian militias.
Yeah.
Like, they're just recruiting, like, Afghan conscripts and sending them to the front lines, so... And not to mention Wagner, which is a whole other issue, which is not the Russian military. The Kremlin is giant, they have a huge bureaucracy, and if you think the FBI can dictate the actions of the Defense Department, let me tell you... The intelligence parts cannot dictate what the military says and vice versa there with any fucking authority either, so...
Yeah, but notionally, isn't it a more centered bureaucracy where it could go... There's fewer hurdles and people between those two departments and the, upper echelon... Notionally, you know, Putin, but I'm sure he has a fucking chief of staff that we don't even know the name of who's like super important, stuff like that. But, I mean, can't a lot of that type of coordination more easily go through those channels than here? I mean, that would be, I'm not even trying to say that you're wrong in specifically, but I mean, isn't that?
I mean, yeah, but also over there, you have to worry about the personality politics. The same thing that killed the Soviet Union is going to kill Putin, because people are not going to tell him what he does not want to hear.
Oh, God, have you seen Death to Stalin? Death of Stalin?
Uh-uh.
Oh, that's the best movie. It is the best movie. And that's essentially... That movie is about... And okay, speaking of things afraid of, talking about our own politics here, it's kind of a commentary on the cult of personality of, like, the leader... which is something I don't think we are in with Trump, but that's the fear that people have, is that it's going to lead down
a personality, develop a real cult.
To have a Stalinistic type leadership style. And anyway, so in the movie, there's all these, sycophants and supplicants to Stalin, and then he dies, right? And so in the rules, there's, okay, you form a committee and you govern.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's a communist.
And they were all brought up in this like culture of fear and paranoia, and they only know how to operate through him. They don't know how to operate in terms of just, you know, like a
regular government.
Yeah, like a functioning committee in even just like fucking like county board somewhere here. You know, mm-hmm. Like people are generally honest. They have policy ideas, they have a rule of law instilled in them, things like that. Yeah. And none of that exists in these people. And so it just shows like the dysfunction and backstabbing that happens. And it's great because it's like, because it always comes back to, well, everything was at least stable under Stalin, but once he left, that he was, you know, you can't build a bedrock of a government around one individual like that.
Nope.
And, yeah. And I don't know, I mean, doesn't it feel like that's a thing for Russia? And I don't know that that's something that makes me afraid here. As you say, they're a big country with their own problems.
I mean, the Russians might want to be afraid of that.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, any country that has one leader and one government for too long needs to start worrying about how it's going to fail.
I mean, yeah.
Look at us, but... Our constitution changes and we have peaceful transfers of power. Ha ha ha. I wave that. My finger at the microphone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, that's... I mean, okay, let's talk about our political... Like, things that politically make me afraid is Trump,
I'm
like, being president for life. Like,
oh, God.
But why does that make me afraid? That's kind of what actually prompted me to have this discussion about afraid. Like, that is, like... a pervasive fear of, like, the kind of, you know, left, and shit, even, like, the Never Trumper crowd, you know, of just everywhere from regular people to, like, intelligentsia. But, like, I'm not trying to argue with him for president for life, but why am I afraid of him as president for life? What does that mean for me?
Well,
or others?
It's kind of an interesting question because we don't experience that in America. Yeah. Like, I was kind of afraid of it with Bush because he loved to follow the law so closely. But he moved on. He went to go like paintings in a bathtub, I guess. But whatever. I mean, he's trying to. I will give W some credit. He seems to have recognized the terrible things he's done, even if it, you know, is only because he can't leave the country most of the time.
Yeah, and I have been on the record saying he was my favorite ex-president until he got involved in the Kavanaugh hearings and campaigning.
Not Carter, though? Not Mr. Build houses with your bare hands until you die, Carter? I mean, that's...
Dude, you know, it's kind of like he's so humble, he doesn't grab my attention. It's a compliment to him that he wasn't my favorite, if that makes sense.
I'll take your word on it.
He just does his thing, you know. It's just not, I don't know. And plus, I like the idea of like someone like changing so much, like Bush. Like Carter didn't really, he's just always kind of been like an all right guy. I mean, maybe made some policy mistakes. But most people, I think, it's hard to apply a nefarious thing. It's much easier to apply nefarious motivations to even like Obama or just, you know, like most politicians. It's hard to do that for him.
He just didn't push hard enough. I mean, we've just gone through Nixon, Ford, and the fact that he didn't, like, you know, push policy, I guess to use the simplistic Overton window analogy, he didn't push far enough back left that Reagan was able to push so much further right than he should have been able to.
Yeah.
That's about the one serious criticism, the most serious criticism I have of Jimmy Carter.
I'd agree with that. I've heard some policy things brought up before, but it's like even in my worst interpretation, it's like, it just seems like he was wrong. he decided. Like one I recently heard about was this government funding thing. The reason we have shutdowns is something the Carter administration did.
Ugh.
And they did it. They did it because the Congress at the time would take like this really long time, and they almost seemed like lazy about funding the government. And the regulations would say you just keep the previous funding until it changes. And the Carter administration said, "Well, no, we're going to put a time limit on it, and you have to pass something by then." I guess a CR. And that was like all fine. It got like Congress like to do their job, you know, it like lit a little fire under them, but now this has been sort of distorted.
He legislated the bully pulpit.
I don't even know if it would.
Kind of is.
Well, no, I'm just saying the legislate part. I'm not sure how the. I feel like it was like a Department of Treasury just like regulation changed or something weird like that.
Huh.
Or like an in-house interpretation. But you're right. Yes, they tried to, instead of him just like, you know, being like, "Hey, give me something on my desk," and, you know,
I mean, as policies go, it certainly makes government more inclusive. It's like, "Hey guys, do your job so we can all like." So I have to give him props for that. I mean, he could have just taken those funding levels in perpetuity and been like, "Okay, well, that's the way it is then."
Oh yeah, for sure. And
so yeah, I kind of don't disagree with that.
No. I think that's the reason I bring it up is just like, okay, that's something that is like today as we record this, January 16th, 2019. Government shutdowns are a problem that hurt people.
Yeah,
but I can't like he didn't have any sort of like neocon libertarian fucking
socialist
whatever extreme radical reason, you know, changing the system. He just wanted like Congress to like work harder and which is like different than presidents normally.
Yeah, well, I mean, we currently have Trump decrying the Democrats for not working, and this is We'll get to that at the end of the episode, but to get to your previous question about what it's like to live in a car.
I instinctively feel fear at the prospect of Trump indefinitely maintaining control. Maybe he stays in the presidency despite losing an election, or there's some sort of, you know, like even way more than 2016, like massive irregularities, or they just change, you know, the amendment right before, you know, after 8 years or something like that. I mean, he's kind of old, so I don't know if this is the most realistic concern, but that instinctively makes me afraid. But why does that? Like, I don't understand. Like, it's hard to game out. What about that?
So, for one thing, we know that people, like, okay, we'll use Trump. He's a perfect nepotistic dictator. He's going to pick the people he likes and the people that will give him whatever answers he wants, even if it, sorry, I just lost my train of thought.
It's okay.
So, for instance, the great thing about the American style of government is that things change over. Like, we have a bureaucracy that's regulated, that people will retire, new positions will open up, so people will, you know, progress through their careers in a rational, logical, and predictable way.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with personality politics and nepotism is that this guy, if he suddenly doesn't get the answer he wants, will suddenly do away with, like, an entire chain of processes or an entire chunk of bureaucracy because it doesn't suit him, which makes it completely unpredictable. And, you know, like, I mean, from an asshole capitalist perspective, that is very, very dangerous. But it should be dangerous to almost anybody who enjoys a comfortable lifestyle and otherwise happy way to live.
Yeah, so you're saying, like, a crumbling, like the just the most basic thing
is that if it introduces entropy to the system, it will start to crumble.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, like, certain individuals might have a more, shall we say, harsh effects if something like this were to happen. You know, like, he'd be bolder about political enemies and the like. But you're just taking the basic, like, civil service and bureaucracy begins to lose any semblance of it being a meritocracy or anything like that.
Right, and there's, like, again, no rationality behind it. And, you know, it's not even that, but just kind of the predictability.
Yeah. Yeah, knowing what to expect when you go to the government office for, you know.
Mm-hmm. Knowing that your tax bill will be, I mean, maybe not the same every year, but it'll be due on the same day.
Yeah. Yeah. So, kind of along these lines, that, you know, I said earlier I wanted to get to the Russian interference because that is a big thing people are afraid of, you know. I think it causes a lot of fear and anxiety in people. I mean, I think a lot of it, a large amount of it is simply just the person at the center of it. He just instills fear and anxiety in people.
Jesus Christ, people, quit reading fucking Tom Clancy novels. It's not so individual. Anyway.
Well, sorry. Okay, so here's where I'm going, though. To me, it's not so much, so the Russian election stuff, it's not really, really well explained and thought out, I think, when the media, like they don't often get into the sort of moral assumptions and are they making, and to
like
me,
a technical nuance of voting.
Well, to me, it's not that we're afraid. Like, it's an, there may be people afraid of this, but and certainly the Trump the president being hinted to be being investigated for being an asset of that government, it certainly throws a wrench in my theory a little bit. But to me, it's not that we're afraid of the Russians. It's not Red Dawn. It's not the Russians coming in and taking over. It's that we ourselves are so fundamentally flawed that we could be, with just like some hack effort, frankly, on behalf of this foreign government, we can be so turned around and, you know, upside down. And it's we're afraid of ourselves. This is like a you know, we have deep seated doubts that as a nation we need to like go talk to a therapist about. And to me that's what the fear is. And I think that is a legitimate fear. I just think it creates not that they're not involved. The Russians are involved, but it puts the fear upon them, and so then we aren't being constructive about ourselves.
Sure, and I think that's that's kind of the problem, is that, yes, there are things to be afraid about with this whole Russian election interference issue, but the problem isn't Russia. Again, I am not afraid of Russia, the Russians, Vladimir Putin, necessarily. Because I don't think he has any individual beef with me quite yet.
Well, that's very selfish.
Well, I mean...
But the
problem is that, and the problem that kind of continues to be unaddressed is that the fact that somebody was able to like find these exploits is kind of problematic for our democracy. We need like paper ballots and ranked choice voting so that we're not hackable by somebody who understands math.
Yeah. So that's it's interesting you're bringing up the technical aspects of the election, because because our government is telling us, which I suppose I believe them, that the Russians did not, quote, change votes in 2016, or anyone changed votes for that matter, supposedly. We don't really talk about this enough, but the idea that even like was that subject was explored that by the Russians, right? That's the reality winner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fact that it was even broached, like they thought, let's see, maybe can we? Like that to me is just the idea that votes have been or could be changed, and we. There's not only aren't informed about it if someone else knew, but we can't publicly track it.
Okay, that admittedly, that is terrifying. But to be fair, there is no proof that they got anywhere near any votes. Like, if they did change votes, it was purely on a, like, thoughts and minds kind of level.
No, yeah. Yeah, and that... And so, yes, yeah, so this is kind of it's good to, like, pull apart these fears and I have been, okay, this is like a conspiratorial fear, which doesn't keep me awake at night, this fear, but the idea that they wouldn't tell us if it did happen. Like, that would cause, they would have, like, you know, you've seen this scene in movies and shit before. They think revealing this to the public, the damage from that would be worse than the damage from the changed votes.
Mm-hmm.
That shit kind of scares me.
And that's the legacy of the War on Terror, because Cheney and the bureaucracy that he assembled started classifying anything and everything that might remotely reflect them in even a slightly negative light.
Yeah.
Or any government official or anyone who works with government, even down to like the individual privates and field soldiers.
Yeah, it's like trying to artificially raise the bar of like the public's expectations, and like the public isn't going to like trust. We just aren't going to trust the government.
Trust you less. I don't know what you expect to accomplish.
But it's like it kind of like set the stage a little bit then for someone who thrives on mistrust or distrust, which is Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of like he has a way of like. He has a way of gaining trust by just casting distrust on others. Like, it's like, what about, isn't it? Like, that's his whole...
It's his only shtick, really.
It is, yeah. So... and so, I don't know. I don't know if that's something, though, that's like...
And I mean, I'm kind of afraid that this voting system, these voting system problems, aren't being more addressed, or aren't being addressed more forcefully, I guess I should say.
Yeah. So here's the thing about my fear about that sort of thing, which is, it's so easily solved. Like, there's countries that take this shit seriously. Paper ballots is the big one.
And Jimmy Carter, for instance, has a whole book of guidelines about
that. Yeah. And like, the fact that... Maybe I should be more afraid of... Not so much that it can happen, but that no one's doing anything about it.
Yeah, that's the fear.
Why?
Why? I don't know. Would it cost money? I can't imagine it would. Is it just that voting is cost so little that it's not worth the consideration? But that makes even less sense to me.
I could be wrong on some of the details, but I believe Amy Klobuchar and Inhofe, Senator from Oklahoma, introduced a bill that covered a lot of this stuff into the Senate in 2017, I believe, maybe early 2018.
This is like low-hanging political fruit. I would be surprised if nobody did.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was a bipartisan bill introduced that McConnell just, like normal, just kind of put his boot on. Maybe through intermediaries, but... So, I don't know. I mean, like, I think a more thorough public... like, this is one of the fears we're talking about that, to me, is, like, just, like, frankly, just the easiest to solve. So maybe just enough people aren't afraid about it. Maybe it's one of these things where we want to encourage fear. That's bad, right?
No, you don't encourage fear.
I won't encourage
discussion. The only thing we have to fear is fear of being left out. Oh, wait, what?
That's like my high school mantra. So, I don't know. What do you think about being afraid of ourselves, though? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I know I'm the creator of my own worst enemy.
Yeah.
So.
And it's not always just, you know, it's like, it's not always just yourself. It's, it's like your group. You know, I'm afraid of our group. Like, you know, all 300 million of us type thing.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait, what?
No, no, not like my personal friend group. I mean, you know, we're a big country, and yes.
There are some of us we might want to be afraid of. I mean, they just found burned human remains in Walworth County that I haven't heard them identify yet. Or, you know, whatever crime is associated with their creation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's some... Okay, fear is supposed to be a motivating instinct. It is not supposed to be something that paralyzes you into stress and anxiety and other terrible behaviors. So, it is supposed to motivate you to do something about it, like run away, fight back.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. Yes, so I think this is kind of where it's like, but you can't do that until you are able to, like...
Process, understand.
Yeah, and have specific... things you're afraid of, like when you just have like that sense of dread, you know, both either on a personal level or, you know, maybe even a societal level, like that personal, like that sense of dread inside you, but you're like, I can't put my finger on it. So you can't really solve anything. You can't do that. So that's kind of, I don't know, that's sort of my motivation for this episode.
Yeah. And just to think about that, it's like a microsystem. So you're reacting with fear, but you're not going to react in any rational way or even necessarily a way that accords with your own best interests. And so at best, you're just like bleeding energy out, just like irrational, like purposeless behavior. Or at perhaps worst, that energy is going to be harnessed and utilized by somebody else. And they absolutely do not have the aforesaid mentioned individual's interests in mind.
Yeah, and so, like, with the elections thing, like, the reason why that doesn't give me, like, an overwhelming sense of fear is because, even though it's a very grave threat, to me there is a solution that, you know, you got to try to elect your representatives, give them calls, you know, the normal political processes to solve it. But, I mean, it's, like, within reach. Like, it can be done.
And, you know, if we wanted to be afraid of that, we should have been afraid since, like, 2000. I mean, we've had two not popularly elected presidents in our lifetime.
the 2000 election
is even shadier. So,
well, like that, it's disappointing that that did not lead legislators to be more worried about that. Like, I don't remember any sort of big election system overhaul, and that because the losers won, you know, like, so they don't have the motivation.
Yeah.
I don't know exact, and maybe that's a little bit of what's happening now, give or take a couple Republicans who are like, well, this is just the right thing to do, but...
I mean, we keep giving the GOP every opportunity to mess with our voting system, and they have clearly demonstrated interest in, you know, preventing true representative democracy through gerrymandering, packing, cracking, and stacking. It's just nuts, dude.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that scary? Is that a legit... I mean...
That doesn't scare me, but it does anger me.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you on that one. Yeah. And on that issue, I occasionally feel hope. You know, because I can see a way out. Again, you know, it's kind of like... Like the other fears, if you're able to kind of put a name and... No, not a face, but, you know, to identify it, define it. And I think in the case of that, it's like we know what the... They aren't, like, mysterious boogeymen. It is gerrymandering. Like, it's that's a problem that there are smart people in the world working on. And we just have to, like, give them a kind of political and societal boost. Yeah, support.
Institutional support.
But, like, going back to, like, the war on terror, one of the reasons that that either instilled fear in people who were afraid of the terrorists or people who were afraid of the people, you know, like, our government instigating a war on terror was, I think, the kind of, like, secretive nature to it. Like, has the government ever, like, released, like, a very, like, thorough and open government...
Commission report?
Well, not about 9/11. I mean about things since then. No, like,
I don't think there's certainly... I'm trying to remember. I can't...
You know what I mean? Like, these are all the things we've stopped. You know, terrorist acts we've stopped. Here's the
there's
things...
There's no accounting for that.
Because a lot of it gets kept, because, you know, not even just open investigations, but, like, if no charges were brought, if things aren't brought out in open court, then and we don't the hear
it's like
about
a,
them.
Well, military action, there are no charges. That's the best thing about the corruption behind military spending. It's like, there's no paperwork. You just drop that bomb, and they're not going to, like, come back asking for the bomb.
Yeah.
But, you know, the charges, people have a very vested interest in following that.
Yeah.
And that's what makes people, and that's part of the fear, not knowing. So if you're afraid, first think, what don't I know, and why is it making me afraid?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've spent, that's something, like, I feel like a lot of my fear about Trump is, you know, like, my red-blooded liberal fear of Trump is like the what the fuck is this guy's angle? Like, he's confounding, which we've, you know, spent a lot of hot air on the podcast about. But I think if you look at, like, specific actions of his, you know, it's easy to define at times. Like, the lens of just him being a greedy narcissist explains the vast majority of everything.
Sure, a greedy, like, just blatantly corrupt, fucking nepotistic businessman.
Yeah, if you just reject the notion of, like, whatever, like, 5D chess and all that.
Yeah, he's not even playing checkers. It's like, okay, he's a crazy businessman, and if you're wondering about the crime, he seems to have spent most of his life at least adjacent to organized crime in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he did run a casino in Atlantic City into the ground, so...
And made
a bunch of money off the bankruptcy.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, he, like, that, I love that, the background, I mean, in a, I hate it sort of way, but I love the background on that, because it's, like, it's just, like, at every turn during that whole ordeal, He's just like screwing people out of money, investors, contractors, just left and right. The government. And he just gets away with it.
Yeah. Because he screws over, he tries not to screw over the right people, I guess. I don't know how, it's probably the mobsters again.
As someone who's not a billionaire, Charles, are you afraid of the kind of like, it's one of those things where it's like really rare to happen, like your house burning down. Like, I was actually just talking about this last night because someone in our neighborhood, their house caught on fire a few weeks ago. And we were saying how, like, we're both, like, afraid of our house burning down. You know, like, I try to have good fire safety with candles and shit like that. But I'm not, like, I don't feel any in my gut fear about it. Because it's just, it seems, like, entirely unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, to me, I sort of have the same thing with, like, an imbalanced justice system. Where, like, you know, you have Trump. With the casino and any number of things, honestly. But, like, you know, like, the story about Epstein a few weeks ago, or the Herald, like, looked deeper into that. Yeah, and it's like, you kind of, like, being a victim of a crime of a billionaire is sort of a frightening thought. It just seems like, well, I'm unlikely to ever, like, shake hands with a billionaire, much less be the victim of a crime, but man, if I was, that would be, like, a horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Or just, like, basically anyone with more financial or legal resources than you. Like, somebody really wanted to make your life miserable, they're using the justice system, especially they could easily very much do that.
Yeah.
Like, even in civil court, like, you can drag poor people through civil court until, they're left despondent, honestly.
It's possible. I mean, I think that, I think in the civil cases, though, there are, I think it's also just as possible to, like, to overcome those odds. In the criminal justice system, though, there's no, like, independent, like, you either have, like, a prosecutor who's going to do shady things, like in the case of the Epstein, or you have one that's just, like, a noble knight type thing, but, like, you can't, like, seek out your own counsel. So if, like, I'm the victim of a crime in my city, and somehow this wealthier, more powerful person was involved, They're not fighting against me, you know, lucking into, some John Grisham, a private attorney, you know, like, they're going against the prosecutor who's already in, you know, the DA who's already in place and who's not working on my behalf directly. I'm not directly that person's client.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that is a pretty terrible situation.
And so, like, what happened with Epstein, if that would have been in a different federal jurisdiction, because I believe what's his name, the guy who's now the labor secretary, that's the guy who was the DA or the U.S. Yeah. attorney, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if that was in a different federal jurisdiction with a different U.S. attorney who doesn't play that game, like, the outcome for Epstein sort of indirectly the victims might have been completely different.
Yeah, they would have gone after Epstein and put, like, hundreds of years on his neck until he started naming names.
Yeah.
Which seems appropriate.
I mean, who knows? I mean, I really
hate state authority, but, man, there are some crimes that just need to have, just, the consequences just need to be put on people's necks.
Well, I mean, I think as long as it's within the bounds of, yeah, I mean, like, state authority, that's a fear, okay.
Yeah, there's a fear of state authority. I don't necessarily fear state authority because I understand it, but
yeah. There
are some potentially frightening aspects about it because of the irrationality of the people involved, as we said before.
Yeah, Yeah, kind of. You know, there's people on the left and the right who have had both genuine and irrational fears mm-hmm. of state authority
and let's
going back a few decades at least.
Whole swaths of our society. I mean, people have a fear of the irrationality of that guy stepping out of the cop car.
Yes. Oh, dude, nothing gets my heart going like being mm-hmm. near a cop. And I have I've about as clean of a record as you can have. I have an underage drinking ticket is the only like legal time I've been in trouble with any sort of legal, you know. Yeah. But it's like, man, I can be doing nothing wrong and walk by one on a street and just I can feel that.
Yeah, I unfortunately have spent some part of my life under scrutiny, at least by the police, I'll say, but especially when I was a kid, it was pretty bad, the harassment at times.
Well, yeah, and that's and I'm saying like I have little reason to have this fear. I don't know why I have it, but I don't know if it's just some distorted Catholic guilt or something. But then, like, imagining someone who has been harassed, and that's whole fucking communities and classes.
Yeah.
That's a fear. Like, that's a fear that I don't know how you... This is probably one of the harder-to-fix ones that has been brought up in today.
Yeah, because it's a very interesting 10th Amendment problem.
Yeah, it's kind of pervasive in the system. Like, you can point it to all these levels of not just criminal... I mean, every level of the criminal justice system, there might be, oh, there's this thing about judges and sentencing, or there's this thing about DA's offices, or there's this thing about the public defenders, or there's, you know, this thing about the way the statutes were written, which is then how laws get made, you know. But then right. We can also look at education and fucking tax code and zoning laws, and it's like that's it touches so many aspects of the system that it's hard to blame people for then opting out as best they can. You know, and until you have a state that is trying to use their authority and to reassure, you know, like kind of like pulling back their own authority as a way of reassuring people.
Sure.
But that has huge political risks, then.
Yeah, no politician is probably going to do that, at least professional politician.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just such a weird duality that police are, like, very literally the face of government that most people, like, recognize as government, but because of the 10th Amendment, their regulation is entirely local, so...
Yeah, I'm taking these paralegal courses right now on the floor of this... building that I take my classes in, there's just one room that's a classroom for my program, and there's like 6, 7, 8, I don't know, it's you know, it's a whole floor of a building that's almost entirely devoted to I don't know precisely what the program is called, but you know, cop, it's cop school, police yeah. academy, okay. And you know, they all dress a certain, they have like these trainee uniforms and all this that they wear every single day, and mm-hmm. and I'm like these, like, what are these people that's like, I don't know, I don't want to disparage them too much, but you know, I'm not like walking by people having high-minded conversations about the role of race in law enforcement and shit like that, you know, they're not rubes, but they're, you know, they're just normal people, and I'm like, they are a huge component of the law and the government, and particularly the interactions with the government, is a person with a gun. Is a normal person with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what you're most likely going to encounter.
The one most controversial and probably the easiest solution for this problem is that don't let patrol officers carry guns anymore. Like, make them request a special unit to come with a gun to deal with whatever problem it is that requires them.
Yeah, it's interesting how what kind of like breakdown is there of if that would be it'd be man, it'd be a hell of a study to undertake, but to look at like times where a gun, let's even just say a gun was drawn, you know, the reasons, find some categories and some reasons why. Would they be situations in which the person expected to anyway? How often were lives actually threatened? I don't know. I mean, it's hard enough for us to just, like, come up with this sort of, and by us, I mean, you know, like, society, to come up with a clearer picture of how police shootings happen. Mm-hmm. Much less,
encounter do they happen? Like, if it'd be interesting for the scientific study to be like, so is it within 30 seconds of the first face-to-face contact? Yeah. Is it within minutes? Is it like more than 30 minutes? Because that, you know, leads to some potential things to study and address.
You know, so I would not want to become a police officer, because I am very fearful. It's this conversation. I am very afraid of many things that harm my person, not to mention the existential crises. And so, like I don't want to be a firefighter because I'm afraid of fires and heights and shit and like high water pressure. But
yeah, I don't want to be a cop because I just hate people who drive badly in traffic.
So,
I know as a cop, I would just pull them over aggressively.
Yes. Gun drawn for not putting a blinker on.
You were talking on your phone, lay on the ground.
But I imagine that the people who do become police, like, because, you know, they're regular people, they just happen to choose to be police officers. I mean, that's the one defining trait, is that they choose and succeed in passing through the police academy and can get a job in it as a police officer. That's it. Mm-hmm. We can talk about honor and service and bravery, but I mean, like, the one thing we know that they can do is just that. Yeah. Imagine a lot of them are afraid, that they're fearful, and that's why they're
the person with the gun, but yeah, people get aggressive towards.
Yeah. And I feel like when you're afraid, you take drastic measures. And they've seen shit. Like, a lot of police officers, either they've seen some life-threatening, you know, like, that they didn't create life-threatening situations to them, or their friends, or their buddies, or there's a story in
or
that.
Or a child.
And, I mean, I guess I'm just roundabout way of saying I agree with you on the taking away the guns from patrolmen, because...
Yeah, well, okay, so do you remember the case, what was it, in California a couple of weeks ago, where some kid just, like, texted in a bomb threat, and they responded with, like, assault rifles into the classroom?
What, did it shoot the bomb? I don't get it.
That's the problem. It's like fear that just like stifles decision making.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, and you're not creating less fear by introducing a gun into that situation or responding so aggressively.
Yeah, the overall fear level is bound to increase with more guns. It's like that. It's a little bit of a Nash equilibrium. So it's like you may feel a little less afraid if you have a gun.
Mm-hmm.
But the overall fear will go up. And so, like, the way to have the least amount of fear is for no one to have guns.
Right, because everybody's on the same level in the situation, and there isn't, like, that inherent power dynamic that is prevalent with when one person has a gun and the other one doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, granted that, you know, they don't want... So, I mean, this is kind of, so they don't want to be the one, you know, you can't blame them. Really, and they don't want to be the one without a gun if the other person, if the perpetrator has a gun.
Sure, but it's just a matter of respect, and because if the perpetrator doesn't have a gun drawn,
I mean, we can point to tons of situations where they are pulling guns, they're using, they're threatening to use, or they are using them without a actual threat to their life.
Right.
But...
And there are so many laws protecting police, it's difficult to be like, oh, I need that gun because people have no, like...
Well, people are afraid to... People are afraid to restrict police. For whatever reason it happens, I mean, I'm sure we can come up with some, but it gets to a point where it's a self-sustaining thing, where the police are viewed as more police, just more, you know, I'm using almost like a verb, more policing, and more harsh policing is the way to handle the fears about crime. But rationally speaking, there are situations and types of situations, there's qualities of situations and contexts where less is more.
Right. Where disengagement is...
But that conversation, like it's kind of happening with, like, the, you know, like, the federal prison criminal justice, whatever, the First Step Act or whatever they called it. You know, I mean, I don't want to say none of this type of conversation happens. I mean, granted, that's more about the prisons than, you know, like how federal agents should be armed or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, fear is wrapped up in all of this.
Yeah, it's all fear, man. And it's just stifling decision-making, which from, I guess, the ass economist in me, it's like, that is the worst part. It's like, we need to make some very real decisions, but we can't because everybody is either clutching their pearls or having a panic attack or having some other medical problem associated with this fear and panic that we all seem to be suffering from.
Yeah.
It's causing other mental illnesses, which, you know, the problem isn't getting easier with the lack of resolution. Sorry.
Yes. No, yeah. So yeah, let's kind of wrap up. And, like, you sort of, like, parodied the only thing you have to fear is fear itself, FDR line from his, was that from his first inauguration or his second?
Stand by.
Okay.
The only...
Oh, maybe I'll put in...
That was from 1933, inaugural address. Yes, that was the first thing The next president could probably read that inaugural address, and it would be entirely appropriate.
Well, that's what I was going to say is, so two things. One, could that happen today? Could a political leader, or I guess it could be someone who's not a presidential candidate, but some sort of important leader, but I mean, it's, I don't know. But could they be successful with that message? Sub-question. I don't know why, I don't have any evidence for this, but I've always been skeptical that FDR actually reassured people, but I hear it over and over again, so I mean, I guess it's probably true from an historical perspective that he did give a sense of reassurance to a nation, which prevented, honestly, we don't know, but probably a lot of bad things, if he was successful and he did prevent it from getting out of hand.
I mean, we saw, I showed you, I know, that Intercept video one night at Madison Square Garden. If the New Deal hadn't happened, we would have been right there with Germany, Italy, and Japan.
Yeah. But you can also see how having a sort of platform of, hey, don't be afraid, helped mobilize the United States faster in World War II.
Absolutely.
Because, like,
I'm not afraid of these guys.
If that should happen today, there'd be... Oh, yeah, talk about pearl clutching and shit.
Oh my god, the Japanese are attacking!
Yeah, and then there'd be, like, a big political divide about whether or not they actually attacked us. It's like, well, is Guam part of the United States?
How much money would be made by the makers of Xanax and its derivatives? Based on that one, what, that kind of event alone occurring.
I mean, do they need more money?
Hmm.
I assume.
I mean, that one guy is facing jail charges, so whole family's about to get unwound potentially. But anyways,
But I can still get my Xanax, right?
Yeah.
No, I don't take it.
Well, no, not the opioids, more specifically, the hydrocodone people.
Sure.
It's all kind of the same kind of drug group. But yeah, people, be rational. If you're afraid, wonder what are you afraid of, and if you, and learn more about it.
Yeah.
If you're afraid of the Russians, learn about voting and voting machines. And perhaps nuclear weapons. And if, I guess if that continues to fear, make you afraid, go see that 80s movie that taught everybody not to fear nuclear weapons again. What was it, Space Wars? No.
War Games?
War Games, yes.
I thought they that made them afraid of nuclear weapons.
Are you kidding me? The resolution where the computer is like, the only way to play, or the only way to win is not to play. Because, yeah, there's no rational resolution with nuclear weapons that benefits the person who uses them.
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying, but I feel like people still watch. I mean, famously, Ronald Reagan's like, could that happen? And then, like, what, head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff came to him, like, a couple weeks later, and it's like, it's way worse than you think. I mean, they seemed afraid.
But that's one of those chains.
I don't know if it works.
I'm not afraid of because there are so many people involved. Yeah. That would just be like, what? Fuck no.
Yeah. Doesn't that make you think, though, that, like, what's the point of that system? Because, like.
Aliens?
No. Wait, what? No.
The point of the system to be, you know, if we ever need to, we can strap that shit onto a rocket and send it at a UFO. That's my thought. That's the only reason to have nuclear weapons. You have to use them extra outside the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's interesting. But, like, okay, if an alien invasion is our only reason to have it, like, why, like, maybe we don't, it doesn't need, I mean, it's maybe we've invested a little bit too much in this then.
Yeah, I mean, when you can destroy the planet, like, what, 12 times over, I think?
Well, it's like,
a little too far.
Yeah, like, the movie, Doctor Strangelove / it was like the serious version of Doctor Strangelove. Oh, it's right on the tip of my tongue. It's an awesome movie. But it's like Failsafe or something like that. And it's like the chain of command, because that's part of what Doctor Strangelove is about, is the, like, how do you initiate, or what problems are there in the system to initiate. Mm-hmm. Or could falsely, like, I give a false positive initiation to a nuclear attack. And like, it always struck me that if there's all these people who, like, you, like, me as the kind of observer of this, if I was kind of have, like, a, I could observe, would actually be, like, top secret things. But I would want someone to be like, no, I refuse, Mr. President or Mr. Premier, to start a nuclear war. I refuse to press this button for you. But if that's my best case scenario for the system, doesn't that mean the systems shouldn't just, there should be no system, and there should be, or it should be like, what's the point of having the nuclear weapons then if that's the best case scenario, is that you don't use them? Is this just Cold War?
I mean, there is a giant complex around the creation and maintenance of nuclear weapons that makes a lot of people very, very rich.
Oh, okay. So it's, so.
I'm sorry, it all breaks down to money, but sometimes it kind of does. Yeah. It's our human. It's humans' most efficient expression of free energy in our society.
Well. Water. Surprise, surprise. An episode about Tell Me What to Be Afraid Of. It's been pretty long, so we should wrap it up here. But you bringing up that last point does, I do kind of actually have a little bit of a fear of money. It makes me very uncomfortable. I'm like the Woody Allen of political fears. Alright, so this has been Tell Me What to Think. I'm Peter, that's Charles. Find us on the Twitter, Bloated Nemesis, green_weird, WYRD. Tell me what to TMWTTPOD@gmail.com. Tell me what to think, Facebook page. Tell me what to think.com, StoneDuckMedia.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. All right. Thank you, Charles. You have a good week.
You too.
All right. Be strong.
Be rational.
Yeah, be brave. Yeah. Yeah, be brave. All right. Have a good week.
Some days it's sunny. Some days it rains. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains.